Support for tonight's show comes from Microsoft Teams. You'll always know where everybody on your team stands with Microsoft Teams. It's your hub for teamwork in Office 365. Visit office.com/teams to learn more.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that's right. The Survivor Know-It-Alls are back after episode number 4 of Survivor Ghost Island. Steven Fishback. Oh, my goodness. Yes.
They're back.
We're back. Steven, how have you been?
I'm great, Rob. I'm really excited to be here today talking with you. Feeling very present for this conversation. I'm trying to really be in the moment and like really listen to everything you say and just really engage with
why?
It.
So really why excited. Tonight? Why are you starting that
why
tonight?
Why start now? I don't know. You know, I'm just feeling like very, you know, I've been thinking about meditating. I haven't like actually started meditating, but I've been thinking about it. So I'm feeling very,
ready. Like how Stephanie Johnson meditated on the island and manifested that there would be an immunity idol that would come to the rescue of the former Malolo tribe.
Yeah, and it worked. And that's what I'm thinking for today for us.
Yes, even though he found it in the previous episode. Steven, I was gobsmacked. I thought 130% that it was going to be Bradley going out. The Survivor editors, I don't know, they did the real okey-doke to me. Once they gave me a Bradley talking about, I feel like I'm the new Kim Spradlin, Boston Rob. Like, I was like, oh, come on. Goodbye, can you be more obvious? Yeah. Can you be more obvious and tell me what's going on? Come on. At least string me along a little bit.
Yeah.
And he stayed.
Go ahead, sorry.
And as Josh Wigler once called this generation's Hunter Ellis, the prophecy came true.
Wait, is this generation's Hunter Ellis?
No, Brendan.
Oh, Brenda is this generation. Yes. The Survivor editors are really getting masterful at the fake out. And what I love so much about this episode was that, you know, you really saw both sides of what could be happening. You had a suspicion that it was going to be this one guy, you know, all of the tricks of the trade that we've learned, they used against us. You know, they used all of our editorial assumptions against us so that we believed it was going to be Bradley. But then when it was Brendan, we totally understood why it was Brendan. It was like a perfectly told story. And what did Bradley do? Like, what has he done? Did he run over Mark Burnett's dog? Like, what has he done to deserve this?
Well, I will tell you as simply as I think that there is, much like Kellen conjured the Survivor gods, I think that the Survivor gods don't like it when you come to Survivor and talk about, well, this sucks. This is like, really don't that, this is really lousy. I don't like it here. You know, when you come to Survivor and your Survivor story needs to be, you need to just be take it all in and be like, this is the best I've ever, I love it here. My entire life, I have been waiting for this moment to get to this point so I could be around this wonderful greatness. Everything in my life makes sense now. Not the, it's dirty. I don't like it.
Is that your Bradley? I hope you have time to improve your Bradley before he leaves.
Okay.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Like, you know, people, you know, they want enthusiasm. We want enthusiasm. And for someone who's a little bit dour, maybe that level of enthusiasm doesn't come naturally.
But can't wait to talk about this tribal council. A lot of stuff going on the Naviti tribe once Chris comes back. So we'll talk about all of that here tonight in a very interesting episode of Survivor. A lot of stuff going on as well this week. I will speak with Brendan tomorrow morning. Did not think I would be speaking to him so soon.
Wow, did I not think he was going.
Exit interview coming up on Thursday morning. And then I will have the great Ali Elliott will be here in the studio with me later on Thursday. So we will have that up for you guys Thursday night. And then on the voicemails this week, Steven, Tyler Fredrickson will make his first voicemail appearance on the podcast. So we will talk with him as well. 2 weeks from tonight as well. Run It Up Reno is happening. I will be there. It will be a night of winners as Adam Klein, Ben Driebergen, Tyson Apostle, Big Brother Canada winner, Kevin Martin, six-time podcast award winner, Rob Cesternino.
Wow. And, you're really the ultimate Survivor winner. Yes. Like, other than Rupert winning the fan award, you're right one tier down from
one,
Rupert.
One tier down.
I don't know, anyway. Other than like the View lady, like nobody has profited from Survivor like you have.
That would be a podcast. And also with all the winners and coach, that will be at Run It Up Reno 2 weeks from tonight, completely free of charge for you to join us for a live Survivor viewing. I'll be doing the podcast there. Without Stephen Fishback, I will have to find the will to be able to pull it off.
You know, I don't appreciate your sarcasm. It sounds like
I'm being serious.
Yeah, I don't know.
Be serious. So we will get it together. That show will be live in 2 weeks, and you can join us at the Peppermill Resort. Go to runitupreno.com, promo code Rob Reno for a discount on a room at the beautiful Peppermill Resort, courtesy of Run It Up Reno and Jason Somerville. All right.
Steven. Well, you've seen what happens to my partners when they try to do it without me, Rob. It doesn't end well. Yeah, they flame out, you know, and terribly.
I think the JT thing.
That was sort of where I was going. You know, like the,
I thought you were talking about like what happened to Jeremy after you were gone from the game.
No. All right, let's talk about this episode of Survivor.
Okay, woo! Steven, I want to talk about the plan for the Malolos in terms of what they attempted at the Tribal Council, because I did think it was going to work in the moment, but in hindsight, I don't know if that was the right way to go, and I'm not being results oriented.
Well, tell me what you mean by that.
The idea of, okay, they had the idol. And then, first of all, I thought that Michael was quite masterful at the Tribal Council. God. I think that the presence that he had at the Tribal Council, I did not see that coming from him. I kind of expected him to be, okay, he's 18. What does he know? What is he going to be able to do? I thought he really had a great presence at that Tribal Council. I thought he really took the lead in terms of describing. I thought that he had a bold play to say that James's idol was able to protect two people because of the Ghost Island twist. I thought that that was very clever to throw that out there to potentially cover half the people. And
it's believable. It's believable. And like today's Survivor, if you say this thing does something, like, I can't prove you wrong.
Right. You know, much like when Tony said that the idol that he had was going to work until Final Four and it only worked until Final Five. I mean, there is precedent for that to sort of misrepresent the powers that a particular artifact might have. But then the idea of, hey, we are putting our votes on Bradley tonight. Right. Join us. We are going to vote out Bradley. You don't need him. Come with us, Jesse. It just takes one of you to save the day and come with us and vote with Bradley or vote with us against Bradley from your team. I think that when we take a look at that part, I think that that is the part of the plan that was the problem.
Why?
Because I think that what the survivors do in that scenario, and you have to go back to the famous Three Amigos Tribal Council, where Malcolm and Eddie and Reynolds said, we're all protected. We're voting for Philip tonight. Who's with us? Who's with us? And what you do where when you sort of identify, hey, we can't stand this guy, join us. And let's take out this guy. You sort of set up a win-win for the former Navidi tribe members in that, hey, if you guys stick together, yes, you will knock out one of our numbers. But if you vote wrong, you will lose your most irritating member from your alliance. So they didn't keep the risk of if you're Kellen, if you're Sebastian, if you're Chelsea or Desiree, they didn't keep the risk in there. Oh, if I don't jump ship, it could be me tonight. It's like, well, if I get it wrong, it'll be Bradley and I really don't care.
Well, but why would it be them tonight? So I totally disagree with you,
right?
Which makes me feel like I'm on safe ground. But tell me why. I just want to get some of the premises here. Why could it be them tonight? Like, why if instead Michael had been like, it could be you tonight unless you jump ship, you know, How?
Because that they, if they don't give away their target of who they're voting for, they said, we're putting all of our votes on Bradley. That if they don't say that, Kellen is like, boy, if I don't flip, it could be me. If Desiree could say it could be me. So, yeah,
but by flipping, no, because in that situation, by flipping, you make it you. If the four Malolos are putting their votes on any given person, then that Navidi person like thinks like, wow, like it really could be me. If I screw this up, I might be the one going home. I can't afford to change my vote.
That is fair. That is a fair point in terms of yeah.
See, here's what I liked about Michael's pitch, which is that I actually, you know, the thing you disliked, I really liked. I really liked that he targeted at two specific people. I liked the fact that he said, you know, they've lived together for a couple of days. They've seen the tribe dynamics. They've sussed out what they believe is the deepest alliance, which is between Desiree, Kellen, and Bradley. And he's saying, you know, hey, I'm seeing the same thing you're seeing, Chelsea. I'm seeing the same thing you're seeing, Sebastian. Like, you know that you're not on the top of this group. And now is your shot. And I like the fact that he put the heat on one or two people. You know, if it's, and from my perspective, if it's diffuse, then it's like meaningless. You know, like, hey, hopefully one of you will flip. Like, oh, it's not going to be me. You know, but like, hey, you as a person, you, Rob, I want you to come over to me. I think you would be better over here. You know, you, what did he say? Like, people respect big podcast moves. I've made it very easy for you to do. And I challenge you to play the game you came out here to podcast. You know, I think that you'd like, it's so in your face and it's so personal at that point that it's not that like diffuse sense of like, oh, who knows? You know, it's like me.
Mm-hmm. Let me pitch you on another idea that I was thinking of. Okay.
Yeah.
Could you identify somebody? Could they go to, say, a Sebastian, somebody that they felt like that they could trust and say, hey, we want to vote for Bradley tonight.
Right.
Join us. We'll give you the hidden immunity idol. So basically the same pitch. Wow. But not just incentivize them in terms of like, hey, let's just get rid of this annoying guy. But what if there was something, if they really sweeten the pot for somebody where, and I think you could feel like that maybe somebody, obviously you can't trust anybody completely, but I feel like somebody like Sebastian seems like that he is a solid enough guy. Could you, if you felt like that you had an in with him, could you entice him with the idol?
It definitely feels like, I think it's a really smart idea, and it definitely feels like there is a play that should have been made here before Tribal Council. And I almost wonder if it was made before Tribal Council. You know, the part that we saw, you know, all we've really seen of the Navidi Malolo sort of interaction on that tribe is basically Kellen shutting down the Malolos by the water well, right? When she was with Jenna and Stephanie saying like, oh, it sucks that there's just four of you. And then we saw Bradley today when Stephanie approaches him and he's like, oh, sucks to be you, you know, and that's, you know, I really feel like Bradley's, we debated whether or not Kellen's play was bad last week. To me, like Bradley's play this week really clarified that, yes, that was bad. You know, like, yes, that is a bad idea. You really have to be open to everybody. You really have to at least engage strategically with everybody, and just completely shutting people down. You know, it's bad in the moment. It's bad because then they go off and like plot against you. It misses the opportunity to like build alliances. I mean, Stephanie in that moment from my, and I'm sort of going all over the place. I'll wrap it up. Stephanie in that, you know, in that moment to me was saying like, you know, that exchange was like Bradley said something like, or Stephanie was like, you know, hey, so what's it going to be? And Bradley's like, we'll see. And Stephanie's like, well, just, so, you know, I really don't want it to be me. And Bradley's like, oh, that sucks. You know, Stephanie was saying to Bradley, like, hey, I'm open to doing something here. I want to be on your team, you know, or like I'm open to making a move just so long, just to save myself. Right. Like that's what I heard from Stephanie. And, you know, it really seemed like just by completely shutting it down, Bradley was sort of losing out on a lot of potential opportunities. So, all of which is to say that the only real interactions we saw were those total shutdowns. And I do wonder, like, was there like a Sebastian, Brendan, Michael bro down? You know, we know Sebastian likes to bro down.
Well, just to go back to the Kellen conversation with Stephanie versus the Bradley conversation with Stephanie, I think that while the message was ultimately the same, the delivery, I think, was quite different, where yes. I do not believe that Stephanie walked away from her conversation with Kellen being like, I hate this woman. Whereas the conversation she had with Bradley when he was like, come on, what do you think? It's 5-4. Come on. I thought that she walked away with like this smug jerk. I'm going to love trying to get him out tonight. So I think that it's not necessarily the message, but the medium of how you're delivering it. So in terms of then a potential bro down, I mean, who knows? It looks like from the preview for next week that we're seeing that Sebastian is going to have the love goggles on as well.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. So I actually didn't see the preview for next week.
Don't worry. No problem about that. So, you know, I want to get your take on Kellen going to Ghost Island and opting not to play in the game that was set up for her there. It does turn out to loom large over the vote in that it does give the former Malolos that 5-4 advantage at the tribal council. Did you agree with her thought process there of I will not play the game to get the advantage?
Oh, yeah. I mean, entirely. You know, I mean, that seems like an almost, you know, I really give her a lot of credit for that decision, because I do think in Big Moves era Survivor, it's so hard not to, you know, go for the advantage, as I very well know, or go for like the superpower. But, you know, a lot of the time, you know, playing smart really is antithetical to playing big. And I think Kellen's awareness of the strategic position she's in really trumped her desire to make that big move. And I think that's definitely the right decision here, right? I mean, obviously it worked out that was entirely the correct decision, but given the how slim the majority is of the Navidi versus the Malolos on that tribe, and also like given how like they're so into this numerical advantage, you know, that there isn't more mixing and matching. Like if it were the other tribe where there's a lot more interplay, like maybe there would be room to make a move like that. But on that tribe, on Malolo, where there's basically no interplay between the two former tribes, it really seems like she's got to keep her vote. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with it. I think that just the exercise in sort of like, you know, winning this game is that in the long term of it, you know, is that the right call? I mean, she's playing with the lead in the early going. And certainly for this round, it looked like it was the right thing to do. But I think if you take a thorough examination of all of these Survivor winners over the last 6 or 7 seasons, I think that a key cog in all the victories has been some use of idols or advantages along the way. And so while you cannot second guess the decision that tonight it turned out to be the correct decision, I do wonder if we'll look back at this in hindsight and say like, boy, an idol or an advantage would have really been useful for Kellen somewhere along the way.
Not Michelle.
Yeah. Yeah. But she did get a chance to vote out a member of the jury.
Yeah. It didn't really matter though. Did not have an impact on the game, on the result. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I hear you. And that's like a really tricky thing. Like, you know, having an idol or an advantage can also, you know, really hurt you. And, you know, who knows if she even walks away from Ghost Island with that idol or the advantage, you know, as Jacob had to send it over to the other tribe.
Yeah.
And I really wonder if like she's aware of that. You know, I wonder how much information has filtered throughout the whole survive, like the whole community, all the contestants.
Yeah, because I don't think she would know about the one advantage that we've seen so far was the legacy advantage, which was passed from Jacob to Morgan. I don't believe that she knew about that. I think that Morgan kept that a secret. Dominic seems surprised to be getting it from Morgan in this episode. So I don't believe, even if they were potential allies, that Kellen knew about like, oh, it's just a legacy advantage. So I think that she didn't really even have a sense of that the power might be a lame one.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's not inconceivable to me that like somehow that would have, you know, filtered from Jacob to someone in a way, you know, in a way we didn't see, and then it like makes its way around. But I agree that it's likely she didn't know. And it's also certainly possible that advantage, like we don't know what happens now, right? Like maybe they didn't want that first advantage to wind up in the hands of the person on Ghost Island. But now that the rules have changed a little bit, and as you speculated, people are going after rewards, they're coming back before immunity challenges, you know, maybe now that there isn't a real possibility for a person to get an advantage for themselves, we don't know.
Yeah. Steven, did you think that Sebastian was going to flip when you were watching the episode?
Boy, did I think he was going to flip. Boy, did I thought it was going to be like 5-4 against Bradley, or like even 6-4 against Bradley. You know, and I thought Sebastian's like, I don't know what just happened vote was like his way of sort of excusing himself for like making the flip. I feel like that's what basically, it was like Hannah's vote in Millennials versus Gen X, where she like flips on Mari. And as she says something like, I don't know why I'm doing this. And so I kind of like that sort of brought me back there. But nope. He hung tight. And like, I kind of wanted to say that kudos to Bradley, you know, like let's give Bradley his credit, because he certainly is getting pooped on a lot by his fellow tribe mates. But if Bradley really is the ringleader, and everybody seems to suggest that he's the ringleader, the fact that he did keep his five together, you know, the fact that he did lock them down, you know, we saw just last week that on the other tribe, everyone's voting every which way. So for Bradley to keep his group together and to have them vote cohesively, even in spite of that really compelling sales pitch from Michael, that's a tribute to Bradley. Like, go you, Bradley.
See, I disagree that, because I don't know if he is the ringleader, but I think that he is posturing as if he is the ringleader. So I would give more credit to the people like Kellen, who may in fact be the ringleader, but aren't being targeted as the ringleader.
No, you just like Kellen more because she's got like a peppier screen presence. Like, if we're going by what we've actually seen on the screen,
you relate to Bradley more.
No. Not even that. Although I do love, you know, my Bradleys, but the things that based on the things that actual people have actually said, like, you know, at Tribal Council today, we have that, you know, the Malolos were saying like, Bradley is the leader over there. Bradley is the ringleader over there. So, you know, the only information we have as, you know, viewers of this mystery is that, you know, if anyone is leading things, Bradley's.
Yeah. Steven, let's talk a little bit about what was going on at the other tribe, at the Naviti tribe. And, you know, I did feel very good for Naviti heading into Tribal Council. And this is something that I had noticed. I saw Dalton Ross also mentioned this on Twitter. We saw not 1 second of the Malolo tribe prior to the immunity challenge. And I felt very strongly that there was going to be a Naviti comeback in the challenge based on the fact that we did not spend any time with Malolo. We spent the whole first half of the episode with Naviti. Did you read into that at all?
I missed it, and kudos to you. Although you did make fun of my friend last week for, you know, noticing the legacy advantage.
Who was your friend?
Previously on. No, remember I said that like someone had noticed that last week in the previously on, they mentioned the legacy advantage, which was a clue that Morgan was getting out. So, you know, kudos to you, but that's, I feel like, the same level.
Well, I felt like that I saw last week on the next time on Survivor, we saw a bunch of the people at the Malolo tribe running around looking for idols. And I felt like, well, we haven't seen that yet. So yeah. I felt pretty good on Naviti's comeback. And what a comeback it was, though. I don't want to have that get lost in the shuffle in terms of that. I mean, they were dead and out of it. I would have, you know, the only reason I thought they had a chance was because there was so much about Malolo in the previously on that I knew we hadn't seen yet from, or the next time on Survivor.
I missed it. Kudos.
Yeah. Okay. So amazing comeback. Gordon Holmes said on Twitter it was one of the best in years. It'd be hard to dispute that. And so, you know, very edge of your seat type stuff. But we saw that we felt like coming into this week that we felt like we had a pretty good read on how things were going to go. And we did up until a point until Laurel and Donathan come along and say, hey,
yeah,
we don't even like Chris. Why are we going to vote with him? We like Donathan. We like Wendell. Why don't we keep these guys around? Steven, do you think that going back to something that Tony Vlachos once said in Survivor Kagiyan, is it more important to be in an alliance of numbers or is it more important to be in an alliance of comfort?
It probably is comfort, isn't it? Was that Tony's point? You know, last week I certainly was applauding James for his decision to vote out people who he might like more in order to keep around people who would cause more tribe dissension. But now it seems like the opposite tactic has been taken. And you know, there really is something to playing the game with people you want to play the game with. You know, you're naturally going to like work better with them. You're going to trust them more. I probably would have done the same thing. But also, like, having taken out Morgan, having sort of like severed that big bond, now you just have two people with Wendell and Dominic, and now they're a little bit more approachable. And you know, swinging back towards them and voting out either Chris or Angela is a little bit, you know, makes a little more sense.
It was such a coming out party for Laurel tonight, Steven,
yeah,
where she really was dominant in the challenge. She really was single-handedly won two rounds of that challenge for Naviti. And then she ended up, you know, we talked about last week, who should we be giving the credit to, Laurel or James? And James was so much more visible in last week's episode, but James was almost invisible in this episode. And I would have loved to have gotten his take on, was he on board with the Chris plan, or were Laurel and Donathan freelancing and saying, hey, we're the pair, Laurel and Donathan, and we're going to go out and make this other side arrangement and potentially vote against Chris behind James's back?
I doubt they're going behind James's back, right? At this point, they seem to be operating pretty cohesively as a unit. But, you know, again, it is all speculative. We have seen Laurel and Donathan before as a pair. They were presented as a pair in the first episode, walking and chatting. And I thought they kind of riffed well together in this episode. You know, it wasn't just Laurel saying that they should, you know, side with Wendell and Dominic. It was sort of Donathan who almost prompted that conversation. And so, you know, kudos to both of them for coming up with that. And yeah, it was great. You know, you see Laurel then talking to Dominic. Dominic reveals that he has the idol to her. So really big week for Laurel. I totally agree. And great week for that whole group.
Yeah,
that's a fun alliance. I really like that alliance.
Yeah, that is a fun alliance. And, you know, somehow, you know, Chris, amazingly, is still in the game again, Steven. He will move on to episode 5 coming up. And perhaps, you know, he could be trending towards, you know, if this Navi tribe does go to tribal council, then he could be the one who ultimately gets voted out of there. Or he could be like the consensus merge boot as well.
Yeah, I could see something like that have either of those things. Although, like, he would kind of be a weak merge boot because it wouldn't be very interesting, right? Like, it's always, like, fun when the merge boot is, like, this big character, a big player. You're like, wow, that guy got taken out. This game is on. You know, for Chris to go be like, oh, okay, yeah, I sort of have seen that coming for a couple of
weeks.
When
was the last time that happened, though?
I don't know, Cass in 31.
That was the big one? The shocker?
No. I don't remember the merge boot of any season that I wasn't on.
Yeah, okay. All right. But for Dominic and Wendell, they really, you know, it was interesting to see them after the tribal council to really feel like that their backs were against the wall. Dominic revealed to Wendell about how he has the real idol and gave some hope. Did you like the move for Dominic to tell Wendell at that point about his real idol?
Well, it's funny because it seems like everyone already knows. And even Wendell was like, what? You know, like,
well, it seems like everybody knew about, like, the fake idol.
Yeah, but it seemed like, didn't everyone already sort of suspect, like, that he had the real idol because Chris was running around telling people?
Yeah, well, there was some debate whether he had the real idol or a fake idol.
But I like that Dominic used as an excuse, like, oh, well, you know, like, the reason I didn't tell you is because, like, you're not supposed to tell people about the idol. Like, just like that there's this, like, set of Survivor rules, you know, that people follow. And, like, yeah, of course I didn't tell you. Like, you're not supposed to tell someone. You know, that would excuse, like, somewhat sketchy behavior.
Mm-hmm. And so those guys are really that, while their stock was really rock bottom, you know, coming into this episode where you needed some sort of a Hail Mary with a real idol and a fake idol. Now things are looking up for Wendell and Dominic.
Yeah, but this is why it's so important to, like, keep, you know, like, the people on that tribe, I feel like that group is playing like I want everyone to be playing. Like, keep your options open, you know, make bonds with everybody. You don't know how things are going to pan out, you know, and that's what I really think is wrong with what's happening on the Malolo tribe, where that dominant alliance is just not even chatting. You know, you see Laurel talking to everyone. Laurel's in a meeting with Chris. Laurel's in a meeting with Dominic. You know, we're just not seeing that over in the other group. And it's possible that some of those bonds are happening, but it really seems like the dominant narrative over there is one of separation. And I think that could be really dangerous going forward into a merge.
Going back to last week's vote, where we saw the threesome of Dominic and Wendell and Morgan vote against Angela, while that turned out to be the wrong move last week, can we look at that move now and say that it was a little bit of it provided an opening where, yeah, they blew it, but then that there was almost like that it had they voted against a former Malolo person, maybe there would be more tension between the two groups, and they were able to, by voting out one of their own, even though it failed in what they were trying to do, that the fact that they were sort of honest about their intentions did help them in the long run here.
Well, we don't know. I mean, the long run, you know, only one person wins. It's like hard. It's so hard to make those arguments, like, after the fact, like, did this decision, you know, 3 weeks ago lead me to
We were hard here? On them last week because one of their people ended up getting voted out because their ally Morgan got voted out last week. We felt like they made the wrong move. But what does it speak to? Is there wisdom potentially for turning against one of your own earlier in that even if it goes wrong, there's still an opening of, yeah, while Chris is going to be pissed off, Angela's going to be pissed off. There's still four people that potentially you didn't vote against them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that I would never want to say there's wisdom in turning against your own early. But, you know, it certainly is possible when something bad happens to recover. And, you know, you can find the good in that bad situation. So you're doing a wonderful job, the optimist that you are, at finding the good in that bad situation. And I think you're right. I think you're right that there's, you know, for them to leverage that element of, you know, there is some trust here. Yeah, why not?
Steven, do you feel like that should Michael feel better about how things ultimately went tonight? Speaking of being an optimist, because yes, his close ally Brendan did get voted out of the game, but could he chalk that up to James's idol is cursed? That there's no, yeah. You cannot reverse the curse. It is the too ultimate excuse. Cursed. It is bad luck. Can't get rid of the curse.
We haven't seen anybody with an idol or an advantage do well so far. You know, both people who held the legacy advantages got voted out. Now, you know, Michael's idol was squandered in a, you know, missed attempt to save Brendan, or I guess to save Stephanie. Yeah, I guess that's nice. If it's like, I guess it is nice. Like, this is someone else's. Like, you know, I feel so much like culpability over like my vote steal. Like, oh, that's the vote steal Fishback screwed up. But if it was like someone else's vote steal, like, I think you're right. Like, it really liberates you from all that.
It was a bad penny. What do you want me to do? There's nothing. Yeah. You can't play this correctly. Steven, let me drag you into hot take territory, like a moral. Wow. And I'm just going to pull you over here with me. So Michael said in the episode that he thought that James getting voted out with two idols was the biggest mistake in Survivor history. I tweeted out, I don't think that's in the top 10 Survivor mistakes in history. I have to make my list I was getting called out then a little bit on Twitter about, no, it definitely is. Where do you come down on that? Is James getting voted out with two idols at the final seven in China Survivor's greatest mistake?
I mean, the thing is, like, there's so many similar mistakes of someone who, like, didn't flip when they could have flipped. You know, it's just like the idols makes it so much more visible, you know, or like there's so many other, like, you know, or like didn't make the single move, like any of, you know, when they had the opportunity to do so. So I don't know. I haven't ranked it. Is it up there? The problem is it's those idol moves and the advantage moves that are so much more visible when like bad gameplay is, there's so many more types of bad gameplay that have nothing to do with idols or advantages.
And if James is watching, I know he's an avid viewer of the Know It Alls. Let me just speak to why I don't think that his move was that bad. Okay.
Yeah.
Because one, he got blindsided. It wasn't necessarily a move. It was the final seven. You still had two more tribal councils. So he was going to have to go through one tribal council where he was not going to be immune. And I guess that you say, okay, could he have won an immunity along the way? I don't believe that he ever won an individual immunity in his Survivor playing career, but is it possible he could have won one down the stretch? It's possible. He still had to get through the final four vote, which he would not have had an idol for. And then on top of that he gets to the final three. And unless he is able to get Todd out of the game, Todd goes on to give one of the greatest final tribal council performances of all time. Is it a slam dunk that James wins in a final three? So I think that James can sleep a little easier tonight.
That's very nice.
Yes. Okay. Just to give a little a shout out to our loyal Survivor Know-It-Alls viewer, James. He also went on to play two more times because of what he did. You know, give him
but probably credit. Not only because he like went out with two idols, but
it
also
didn't hurt.
Because
it didn't hurt.
Yeah. What's the dumbest, Rob?
Wu taking Tony to the end.
Yeah, it's probably the dumbest.
And this is how I often describe it in the Evolution of Strategy when Josh Wigler and I discuss that, evolutionofstrategy.com for more on that. That to me, it comes down to if you open one door, you win the game. You open the other door, you lose the game. If you open the wrong door, you made the dumbest move.
Right. And there's very few places where it's that.
Right. I don't think it was a slam dunk that if James plays one of his idols that he goes on to win the game.
Yeah. I mean, so why not Colby? Why didn't he, isn't the same thing?
Colby's got, it's Colby. I'd rank Colby taking Tina to the end way above James.
But I'm saying Colby versus Wu. It's like the same, you know, it's the same move.
Yeah. Well, I think that it was, you know, I think that, look, we'll wait till my list comes out.
Just so you know, Cass thinks, or Cass has said that she would have won.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see. But
no, it's not, no slam dunk.
All right.
According to Cass is a lawyer.
We'll see. We'll talk to Cass about that at some point later on this season. Steven, I want to start to open this up to questions from the listeners of Rob's podcast. Hashtag RHAP for that. But first, let me take a moment and thank a sponsor for this episode of Survivor Notables. Steven, those are friends over at Microsoft who have developed Microsoft Teams, a digital workspace where teams can create, collaborate, and communicate authentically just like they would in the real world or on Survivor. And as we saw tonight,
collaboration is everything.
Collaboration between the teams is everything on Survivor.
See, this is what I've been saying all episode, is that if there had been more collaboration between the two tribes, Malolo and Navidi, they, you know, this impasse, this horrible thing that almost happened, wouldn't have happened. So, you know, if they had had their version of Microsoft Teams, you know, Bradley wouldn't have been in such hot water.
Yeah, absolutely. Support for today's show comes from Microsoft Teams. Microsoft Teams is your hub for teamwork in Office 365. With so much to look after, wouldn't it be great to look in just one place for everything? Instead of hunting around like you have to do on the Malolo tribe to look for all of these idols, that's like trying to communicate with your team across email and social media. It's terrible. Until Microsoft Teams comes in, Teams is the single workspace where you can work, share, and connect with the people in your work life. Teams brings together chats, meetings, files, and apps all in one place. Take teamwork where you work with apps for mobile and for desktop. So whether you're sprinting towards a deadline or sharing your next big idea, Teams can help you and your team achieve even more. I know in putting together the Survivor Know-It-Alls, there's so much teamwork that goes into every single episode of this podcast, Steven, and that's why Office Teams could work for us even.
Yeah, you, me, and Scott.
Yes, we keep all the fishy awards and all in one place. So check out Office Teams as part of Office 365. Go to office.com/teams to learn more. Okay,
Steven, let's do it.
Let's take our first question. What does Stephanie have to say?
Stephanie Barilaro wants to know, should the players be allowed to lie about what power their idol/advantage/etc. has? What do you think here, Rob?
I mean, I don't see a case why they should not be allowed. But Steven, it's up that I mean, you've played more recently. You had a advantage that had certain powers and limitations. What do you think about this? Is this fuzzy ground for you?
Oh, I love it. I love it when the players lie about it. You know, the crazy thing is, at least for this episode, Michael apparently had the parchment with him, and anyone theoretically could have been like, hey, can I read that just to check? So you don't have to believe what someone is saying just because they're lying about it. I mean, I did have a legacy, or sorry, I had a legacy. I had my extra vote advantage and or steal a vote, whatever it was, steal a vote advantage. And I wanted to come up with a great, compelling lie. And I could not think of like a lie that would like work, you know, that would be situationally meaningful, that would both like calm people down, but also somewhat be somewhat threatening. So it's hard to come up with a great lie. Kudos to Michael for really trying and coming up with like a believable lie. I love it. I love it when they try. I love it when it pays off. I love it when it fails.
Was Michael's lie big enough?
I mean, what's he going to be like? If it covers four, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what was interesting? He stood up and he said, okay, Jeff, I want to use this to protect me and Brendan.
And then he susses it out. Yeah.
And then he switched. He went to something else. Now, what would Jeff have said? Would Jeff have said, hold on. Now, Michael, while this is a real idol, we can only protect one person with it. You're lying about that. Like, would Jeff have called out the part of the idol that, and then said, okay, I'm going to need a name from you.
Yeah. I was really looking forward to that moment. I think it would, right? Like, that would have been really fun.
Yeah. I mean, and then it would have been interesting to see Michael. Okay. Let me get a show of hands from, from Naviti. Okay. How many people think I should use it on Brendan? How many people think I should use it on me? I don't know. They flinched a little bit when I said Brendan. Well,
that's what he was trying to do, right? That's the move now, is to say, I'm using this idol for me. And then they get the reaction.
Because then he said, I'll play it on Stephanie.
Well, no, but he was like, you say it for yourself and then you like look at the reaction to see where people and, you know, how people react. And if like people flinch, then you're like, oh, I better play it for me. But if people are like, OK, great.
Yeah, I think this is a slippery slope because I think we're getting to the point where then it's like, oh, psych. I didn't mean that. I'm going to say, I think that we need a name. Is that your final answer? OK.
Yeah. OK. Phone a friend.
Is that your final answer?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Leo Tabelli wants to know, why in the world does Dominic tell Laurel that he has an idol? I get Wendell as his number one, so tell him. But Laurel seems like something that will bite him in the butt. Hashtag our half.
Well, I think that we're going back into Tony territory with Sarah in terms of like, okay, it didn't work when I lied to these people. Let me come back and tell them the truth. Okay, I was lying the first time. Now let me tell you the truth. And then I think that Laurel was endearing to her. She's like, okay, all right. Now, thanks for finally, you know, dropping your guard and telling me what was really going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think when the guy who's like everyone suspects has an idol is like, you know what, I've got an idol, like you feel relief, you know, like you don't have to like wonder and worry and you're glad to be on the inside of that information. I think it was the right move.
Yeah, you got me. You know.
Yeah. And like it does build trust, right? Like we talk about this a lot, how like is the idol better as a secret or is it better as a tool to build trust between a group? Well, it's absolutely at its worst when it's neither a secret nor being used to build trust, which is where Dominic was. So, you know, I think he's at least choosing one path.
Okay. Ben King wants to know, aside from where the idol was played, didn't both sides do the right thing? No reason for old Navidi to turn on Bradley if they know he's the target, and a great fake out by Michael. I mean, if we were going to nitpick either side, you made a compelling case why they should tell Brad, say it is Bradley in terms of trying to get them to vote. I just think that what they should have done, I think, was, you know, pick somebody who would be more likely to flip in terms of like, if they thought Sebastian was the person who would flip, why not say we're putting our votes on Sebastian tonight? So Sebastian, you're either with us or we're putting the vote. And then you better.
But then he's never going to flip. That's my whole point. Like we're putting the votes on Sebastian. Sebastian, if you flip, well, you're inherently voted out.
Let's see. Yeah, I guess so. That's boy. It's tricky. I mean, could you put it on somebody who's more of a threat? I just think that you need to sell people if they don't care if Bradley gets voted out.
But I don't think that's true. I mean, because we've seen this like such this negative side of him, they might like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't buy it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe could you sort of sell it to Sebastian? Like, hey, if Sebastian, we're going to vote for you unless you tell us right now that you're with us, we're going to vote for you.
I mean, if he doesn't like, yeah, I mean, there's, but then I guess that, I mean, there is like some leverage there, like to say you're with us or you're the guy, but then like, they're like, well, I'm not with you and you don't have the votes to vote me out.
Well, but we have an idol. So it's like, hey, it's Russian roulette. All right. We're spinning the chamber. Like, are you feeling lucky?
Yeah.
So,
but then, I mean, it's hard. It's hard to like really say what could be done perfectly there. I mean, to me, the real missed opportunity from the Navidi point of view was not creating a fake plan with the Malolos. Like that seems like really textbook Survivor. Like when you have a group of people who you don't want to start scheming against you, like involve them in a fake plan. And, you know, get them to turn on each other.
They didn't create a fake plan that they didn't sell.
They
them
didn't
on,
sort of create a fake plan that engaged the Malolos and like basically forced the Malolos to go digging for idols and trying to create something among themselves. You know, why not? You know, I mean, that scene with Stephanie, it's like, why not say to Stephanie there, who do you want out? You know, what maybe, you know, are you willing to vote with us? And you give yourself a little bit of insulation.
Yeah, it's a good point. This is from Christian, who says, was the double idol bluff too much? Do you think that someone called it out on trouble? Do you think was the lie that he told too big that they didn't believe it, Stephen?
I'm really curious to hear Brendan's, you know, take on the tribal council. I thought it was believable. And you know, certainly the story seemed to suggest that people believed it.
I thought the story was great. I really did.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Brendan seemed very quiet at the tribal council.
I know. I really did not see him going so soon. Yeah. I'm really sad. I really liked him. I think a lot of people probably had him as their winner pick.
Right. I mean, and on a season where, you know, everyone's talking about like, it's so young. Was that the oldest player, Brendan, to go out?
He was one of the, he's certainly the oldest to go out. He's like 41 or something. He might be, is he the oldest? And was he the oldest in the game? He might be. He was, I think, the oldest guy for sure.
Yes. Steven, was your friend Andrew Savage fist pumping tonight that his chances of going back would improve tonight because his archetype seems safe for the time being?
What do you, oh, like there's not going to be another Andrew Savage type.
Yes.
Doing really well. That's funny. Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know if Savage wants to go back. I guess he said in that eyeglass video with Jeremy, or the eye surgery video with Jeremy, that he would go back.
Okay. What about Adam Humphrey?
Adam Humphrey wants to know, would it have benefited Sebastian or Chelsea to flip on Bradley? Are they really on the bottom? Well, no, it wouldn't have benefited them, right?
I mean, who's to say? I mean, you really get the sense that things are really getting intermingled over at the Navidi tribe. So, I mean, who knows? In terms of like the overall numbers in the game, there are 9 original Navidi left and 6 or 7 original Malolo left in the game. So it's a 9-7 advantage if the tribes ended up holding, but you know, Chris and Angela are wild cards. So I kind of feel like that you could make a case that it would benefit them to sort of like be in this, you know, more mixed up group as opposed to just being a tribal loyalist.
Yeah, I guess so. But then they're still on the bottom of their little, like, why would you flip from probably being in the middle of the dominant tribe to being on the bottom of the losing tribe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Steven, do you ever look across and see what goes on at the other tribe where it's like, okay, hey, there was a 5-4 advantage, but Morgan went home at the last tribal council. I wonder if that there is an alliance that's going, do you need to see a second vote happen like that? Or are you getting into trouble where your bestie JT and Rupert said, look over there. Another man went out the villains tribe, women's alliance. And then you end up getting yourself into trouble.
I don't see how you don't end up coming. I mean, all you basically do is speculate about what's happening on the other tribe, right? It's the only safe. It's like the only topic of conversation that's truly safe. It's like, we all know who those people are. We all have like something of an antipathy against them. Like we all have, you know, we're all like, it's like a fun thing to speculate about that everyone can talk about in a game where you might not have very much in common with everybody around you. So of course they're chatting about it. And, you know, when you see some pattern emerging, it's so easy to get, you know, locked into that point of view.
Were you excited that Chelsea was talking tonight?
I was. You must have been thrilled. Like, prove those purple haters wrong.
Well, I mean, she's probably still has the least words per survivor out of the season. But yeah. Look, at least look, it's nice to know that she's not completely buried in the edit.
Yeah.
So good to see some Chelsea. I mean,
this
tonight.
Is the first time her tribe has gone to tribal council. So
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You gotta wait until a person goes to a tribal council before they get branded with the they're not on the show.
Yeah.
Okay. What about Ryan?
All right. Ryan wants to know, do you see a way back in for the original Malolo 3 now? If no Navidi flipped against Bradley tonight, I can't see it happening anytime soon.
Yeah. Let's rank the 3 remaining Malolo who are there in terms of their longevity. I guess we have, what is it? Stephanie, Jenna, and Michael.
That's right.
Yeah. I think I would probably say Jenna seems like that she's probably the best positioned to last long. I'd say I would have it as Jenna. And then it's a toss up between Michael and Stephanie. I feel like that Michael or Stephanie, it seems like at least has rubbed Bradley the wrong way. That seems like that there is some animosity there. So
she's rubbed him the wrong way, or he's rubbed her the wrong way? Because like we know that both Jenna and Stephanie really don't like Bradley.
Yes, you but
know,
I think that Stephanie's probably been more vocal.
Why? Jenna was the one who said, I'm going to write his name down 5 times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'd have to go back. You know, it's hard to you know, I've only just seen the episode. That's hard to tell what was said in confessional and what was said out in public.
I didn't get the sense that Stephanie said anything negative to Bradley. You know, I don't remember at tribal council that it's certainly possible that something was said. By the way, Bradley at tribal council saying like, oh yeah, I've mixed with them. I've hung out with them as a babysitter. Like what a way to like make the other 4 people feel bad.
Which four people? His tribe mates?
The Malolo people. No, he was talking about, like, you know, have there been any intertribal minglings? And he said, you know, I've hung out. Yeah, I spent time with them as a babysitter.
Yeah. So, yeah, not ideal. That's not great.
Yeah. I actually think Stephanie is in a better spot, you know, than Jenna is.
Do they hold animosity against Michael for what he being so demonstrative at tribal council?
I would think so, right? Like, if I were them, I would be like, I gotta get this Michael guy out. Like, he's really making this aggressive pitch. He found an idol. He's unnaturally well-spoken for an 18-year-old. He obviously has some, like, deal with the devil, you know, so we gotta, like, nip that in the bud.
What's the deal with the devil? You think that he was an older person and then he sold his soul to be handsome and 18?
No, he sold his soul. No, I think he's just like a young guy who sold his soul to be handsome and incredibly well spoken. He got the gift of speech, which is, we all know, the devil's greatest gift.
Yeah, that's interesting that I think that we should get a poll up about this. That was he a young man? Because I don't know if a young man would think to wish for the well spoken. I think that they would just be like, I would want to be insanely attractive. But I feel like that the older person would want to keep their wisdom, but then reverse the curse of aging and be a young man.
But he could have been like a young man with a terrible stutter who, like, all he wanted was to be super eloquent. King's
speech.
Yeah, exactly. Like all the king wants, all Colin Firth wants is to be super eloquent. And I think that might really be where he was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess maybe we'll get an answer on that later on this season. Steven, Daphna wants to know, since Rob loves impressions, I wanted to see if there's any resemblance between Donathan and Kate McKinnon's impression of Jeff Sessions on SNL. To me, it's almost the same voice. I'd have to go back and take a look at that.
Do you think Donathan is just Kate McKinnon doing a character? It could happen.
It could be. It could be. But Donathan is a lot of fun. Steven, what about this question from Rebecca?
Rebecca wants to know.
I like the person missing tribal better. Steven, should they change Ghost Island, the mechanic?
Okay, sorry. I thought I had the wrong screen up. I was like, that doesn't seem very.
Yeah, no. Okay. So they changed the mechanic at Ghost Island this week that, okay, the person who gets to Ghost Island, they will come back before tribal council this week. Did you like that they changed that?
I think it had to happen, right? We've talked a lot about, like, what it would mean if the person going to Ghost Island also got to miss a tribal council, but it seemed overpowered, right? You'd always want to go to Ghost Island for 1,000 reasons. This seems like more like standard, you know, I actually kind of was excited by the idea of someone missing a tribal, because as you get to the merge, those votes become really crucial.
Yeah. I mean, that I just don't know the rhyme or reason for it. I kind of feel like that it should be consistent. And I think that while we had an insanely entertaining tribal council tonight, I feel like that Malolo caught an unlucky break here tonight, in that while Malolo caught a lucky break last week that Chris ended up going to Ghost Island, that you could have had the same situation play out where it would have been another 4-4 potential vote coming up tonight. Instead, it ends up being this 5-4 vote, which only becomes interesting because that Michael found the immunity idol.
Yes, that's a really, really, really good point. It would have been very interesting had Callum not come back before. But I actually don't think of it as the Malolo group catching an unlucky break. Like, my guess is that this was always how Ghost Island was meant to play out. You know, like, that's how Exile Island played out. You know, you'd leave a reward.
But then what's the difference between this and Exile Island? Why is it Ghost Island? If somebody doesn't play a game and they come back before tribal, then what makes this different?
Well, there's the option of games. I mean, I think it is Exile. It's Exile Island with games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I imagine that the only reason, I thought you were the one who speculated that the only reason, and correctly it seems, that the only reason that they were doing it for the immunity challenge was because that was when those two, right, those two episodes only had one challenge.
No, I don't think I ever speculated that. My question was going to be in terms of how are they going to play it after the merge, where it would seem like it would be very advantageous to be able. But I liked it. I felt like it was what's the strategy of who to send to Ghost Island, other than I guess there's a chance that they could have the opportunity to play a game where they could decide whether or not they want to play the game or not. It's like a 25% chance that somebody comes away with a prize from Ghost Island. It's like, one, it's 50-50 whether you get the chance to play the game, and then it's 50-50 whether or not you participate in the game.
Well, there's also, like, you know, there's a social element too, right? If someone's a rabble rouser, you want to get them out of camp, or if someone you know is on the outs, so you don't want them, like, making alliances or disturbing your alliance, you want them out of the way. I mean, the other issue is, like, I hope it's not just that it comes down to a rock draw every, I guess, when there's individual rewards. When there's individual rewards, presumably whoever wins the reward will make that choice. Although it's often like teams doing that. So, yeah, I hope it's not a rock draw every week. That's kind of like, you know, a little bit, it totally removes the strategy from it.
Yeah. So we'll see. Tammy wants to know, did Kellen do the one thing that can reverse the curse by not going for a cursed advantage? Oh, Steven, is the only way to reverse the curse to, much like the game of thermonuclear war, the only way to beat the game is to not play at all?
That's a deep cut there. Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
Ghost games.
Okay.
All right, Paul B wants to know, hey, shouldn't Navidi just throw the immunity challenge? It sure seemed like they were in the process of doing so. OG Malolo could have either done a split vote with Chris and Angela or double-crossed them and gone with Team Dominic.
Yeah, I don't know if they were incentivized to necessarily do that, Steven. Did you?
I mean, it's so dangerous. You know, it's not like they have some like overwhelming advantage over there. You know, it's still 4-4. So you really don't know what's going to happen to the next tribal council. You know, if Dominic maybe has his idol. I would want to stay out of the tribal council much more than I'd want to like save, you know, one of my tribe mates.
All right.
Sorry.
Steven, I'd love to know, in terms of the Fishy Award.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
This is a tough one. Wow. I'm going to guess, if I had to, that you decided to go with a Fishy Award for Bradley.
You're wrong.
Oh.
I thought about it, but I just felt like, you know, I felt like the part of like for keeping his group together, he really deserves some credibility or credit, but he was just so dismissive in so many different places of the other team. And it felt like there were a lot of missed opportunities there. But so, you know, tune in, read the blog when it's posted.
So I don't know what you did there. Then,
I have to click.
Boy, it's not like, the weather. It was sunny for three days in a row.
It's a real person.
It's a real person. Yeah. Were they on the tribe that went to tribal council?
Yes, I really thought about giving it to Laurel as well for her play.
Yeah, because she talked about that she went to your college.
Yeah, for mentioning Yale.
That's big for you.
Yeah. But there's someone on the other tribe. So you got to click. Got to click on the thing. All who right, wins the Sessi?
Yes. Who played the worst this week? I don't know. Is there one? I don't know if there's anybody who played demonstrably bad this week. You know, that's a tough one.
The only person I can think of is Chris, right? Who comes back. He's in a potentially good spot and he ends up rubbing everybody the wrong way so badly that they want to immediately turn on him. I thought it was really funny when Angela tells Chris, you know, hey, they all voted for me. And Chris was like, this was really about me. You know what I mean? Like, that was like his immediate response. And it sort of was really about him. You know, we had that confessional from Wendell last week, or I think it was Wendell, saying, we need to get out. If Chris isn't around, we need to get out Angela. But the fact that Chris like immediately goes there and doesn't even be like, oh my God, Angela, like, I'm so sorry. It's really upsetting.
Yeah, I think that maybe in his mind, that's his way of saying like, no, they couldn't possibly have wanted to get rid of you. Like, you're wonderful. They would want to keep you around. They only wanted to vote for you because of me. So that's why you have to stick with me.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you have to stick with me.
Yes, it's a sinking ship. Get on board.
Yeah, it's some kind of ship.
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Okay. The only other... I had this like long analogy all planned out and it didn't fit in either my blog and it looks like it's not going to fit in the podcast.
We can go as long as you want.
Okay. I was thinking about why Kellen can pull the same thing. And, you know, she does the exact same thing basically that Bradley does, but with Bradley it's so much more irritating to the people than when it is Kellen. And I think, you know, it comes down to interesting that it like gets at the essence. This isn't, I'm going to cut some of this analogy that I planned. I think it gets to the essence of
in the edit.
And like my internal edit right now, of like, you know, why survivor strategy is so hard to analyze because, you know, there's no one right move. And so much depends on not only your situation, but also who you are. You know, for Kellen to be able to play this like aggressively strategic, like, hey, you're 4, we're 5. I'm sorry. That sucks. Like it's with the, you know, it's under the aegis of like her very outgoing, bubbly personality. Whereas for Bradley to say the exact same thing, you know, it comes from his personality, which is a little bit more cold, a little bit more analytical. I was actually thinking of like myself, because, you know, that's all I think about, which is that, you know, I remember like when I went out to play in Cambodia, I got that advice from Cochrane, you know, like just make everything really strategic because then people aren't going to take it personally. And I did that. And it didn't work out. You know, I was voted out. And part of the reason I was voted out was because I wasn't able to make these like real deep bonds with people because I was keeping everything so aggressively strategic. And I asked someone, a friend of mine on the crew, like, you know, why did this work so well for John and really didn't work for me? And he's like, you know, think about who John is. You know, he's like so much more social. He's so self-deprecating. You know, he's like, he really connects with people in this different way, you know, whereas you are much more aggressively analytical. You're a little bit colder, you know, so for John to be very aggressively strategic is going against his, you know, sort of like core, very, you know, engaged persona. Whereas for me, like, it's just like magnifying those traits of my personality. So I thought it was interesting like parallel there with Kellen and Bradley, you know, like the idea that one strategy can be so right for someone and so wrong for someone else.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you speak to something that's a very important part of the game, where in the early days of Survivor, they used to describe it like, hey, it's not about the elements, it's about the people. Yeah. And over the years, I think that there has maybe been some, you know, people means like the strategic part of the game. And while that is very important, you know, it really, I think that even more so than a firm grasp of all of the strategic maneuvering, it really comes down to interpersonal relationships, and that is going to be the ultimate decision maker. I think you can come into Survivor and be fantastic with the strategy, but if you struggle with the interpersonal relationship, you're always going to have more of a problem than somebody who is, you know, very charismatic. And you know, as you're you're describing Cochrane, that he is somebody who does have both of those things, where he is someone who is very well versed in the strategy, but then is also has the ability to be very likable when he chooses to engage with people. He certainly has that power.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think you just need to like play against your type, you know, and it's like why Spencer did so well in Cambodia, right? Is like he was like, I'm this super analytical guy. I'm going to be much more open, much more emotional. I'm going to force myself to be more engaged. And that's what I did in Token Chains. And it's why I did so well. I went out there and I was like, I'm going to make like really personal connections with each of these people. And it worked because I'm so analytical. You know, there's a certain element to which you do almost have to like play against who you are, like consciously bring in the qualities that you don't have. But I agree, like it really does come down to people. And we certainly saw that this week, you know, who do I want to play with? Who do I want to vote out? You know, really becomes a huge part of the game.
But going back to yourself in Token Chains, that do you feel like that obviously you're still the same analytical person, but you did not know the game as well as you would know it when you went to go play in Cambodia. And obviously you did not have the table image of somebody who knows the game, and we're not concerned about the perception that people were looking at you of this guy knows the game incredibly well. Do you feel like that freed you up in your first season?
Yeah, I am for sure. I mean, I think, you know, then people were like, oh, this, you know, I think as soon as everyone hits the island, certainly for that first season, you try to like guess like, who is this guy? Why is he here? So I tried to play up like I'm the awkward city kid instead of like going in the second time when I was the know-it-all. But I also like really did set out in that first time to build bonds, you know, like to build really deep personal bonds. I remember like, you know, you know, I certainly inspired by your example in the Amazon, you know, your bonds with people were really what got you, you know, your like bonds with Matthew or with Butch were really what gave you your leverage, was that you had these connections with all of these different people. And then I dialed that back a lot in Cambodia consciously. And it was a terrible decision for me.
Yeah. So you feel like that you got bad advice from Cochrane?
Well, no, I mean, great advice for Cochrane from Cochrane, but maybe not great advice for me from Cochrane.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Stephen, you've given us so much to ponder in the coming days in terms of what is next on Survivor. And we will pick it back up next week on the Know-It-Alls in the next couple of days. So much going on. Tomorrow morning, Taryn Armstrong is going to be live every morning, as Mark McGrath once said. And he will be talking about not just the live feeds from today, but also the latest episode of Big Brother Canada, which aired right before Survivor. Steve and I spent a good chunk of the morning hooking up a Roku device to my setup to be able to watch Canadian television.
Wow. How is it?
Yes. You know what? It's a lot.
What are the commercials like?
There's, you know, a lot of places that you haven't heard of, like different chains and stuff like that for places that we don't have here in America.
Do you want to start a franchise?
Not particularly. I mean, that's what Heidi wanted to do back in Survivor the Amazon. She was talking with myself and Jenna and Alex. She said, hey, let's collude and we'll split the money and then we'll open up a Hardee's. Sonic. Wow, she wanted to.
Really?
I told production, I'm like, I don't want a Sonic.
How many of the business ideas that people plan on Survivor are food based?
Is that common where the contestants talk about we should all go into business together and open up a fast food restaurant?
there were a number of like food based business ideas, on Token Chains for sure.
What did you want to start?
Well, one of JT's and my business ideas was we were going to start this frozen burrito chain. Mm-hmm. And then like when we got out off the show, Brendan started a frozen burrito chain and it did really, really well.
Yes. You didn't realize that you were like in the midst of somebody who was in the like a food industry mogul.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying he stole my idea, but let's just say, you know, maybe there was a little payback. Like of all of the frozen foods he could have started.
Like, those guys screwed me. Now I'm going to steal their idea. All right. Tomorrow morning, exit interview. I will be speaking with Brendan. I still can't believe it. Join me for that. Plus this week in Survivor history with the great Jordan Kalish. And then on Thursday night, Taryn will be back with a great panel to talk about the second eviction of Big Brother Canada 6. So be on the lookout for that. And then I will have my interview with Ali Elliott coming up tomorrow. You can send in questions for that show. Survivor@robiswebsite.com. Looking forward to chatting with Ali about her time in Survivor 35, plus everything going on in Survivor Ghost Island. And of course, for more information about go further, even more behind the scenes. You think you love Rob as a podcast? You haven't even scratched the surface. Go to robaswebsite.com/patron for all of the bonus shows, all of the behind the scenes videos, and everything else going on in the Rob as a podcast community. Go when you go to robaswebsite.com/patron. And Steven, what a know-it-alls we had tonight. Best of season.
What's the hashtag? I like further even more as just your motto, but what's a hashtag?
Yes. What you got anything?
No, I don't. Hey, you don't like it when it's turnaround is fair play, huh?
Well, usually we don't do a hashtag on the know-it-all. Yeah, I feel like you don't care for that.
Well, I do. I really like it. It makes me feel special, but I'm terrible at coming up with them. You're so good.
Okay. Let's see. We'll see if the chat has anything as we filibuster here for another couple of seconds, of course. Get your voicemails in for the podcast with Tyler Fredrickson coming up this weekend. Go to robinswebsite.com/voicemail. Mail or 323-282-RHAP for that. And also don't forget the Wiggle Room. Steven, have you been enjoying the wand offs this season?
I've listened. Yes, I have. I just listened to one that was amazing. I don't know if it's but I don't. Yeah, I don't want to play favorites.
Yes. You don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I really have.
Yes.
Okay. I'm very excited for Allie. Like, you know, another player who was gone far too soon.
Good get. So I see in the chat hashtag frozen burritos.
All right, frozen burritos. There
frozen
it
burritos
is.
It is.
Twist the knife in my heart.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Of course, if you want to join us at Run It Up Reno in about 2 weeks, come on out. Go to runitupreno.com. Take care, everybody. Have a great night. Bye.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor 080.